Marshal may open the proceedings.
Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Hooten, Judge Connolly, Judge Bratfold, the Honorable Carol A. Hooten presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We are proceeding virtually this morning. The matter on our calendar is In Re the Welfare of the Children of MLS, CVR, and PH. Counsel, you each have 15 minutes for your oral arguments. The appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Please introduce yourself prior to beginning your oral argument and let us know who you're representing. Also, when referring to the children, please only refer to the initials and refer to the parties by not by their name, but just by their initials. This matter will be recorded and will be available to the public. With that being said, we'll start with the appellant.
May it please the Honorable Court, my name is Karen Venice Bryan, and I'm here today representing BRH, the appellant in this case. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. This case is on appeal from the Olmsted County District Court. The district court denied appellant's motion to intervene, holding that the court is not confident that the paternal family can and will keep MLS and CVR away from X if she was placed with them, and that the county has not been unreasonable in failing to place X with BRH. Your Honors, this is a violation of the statute, and BRH respectfully asks this court to reverse the district court decision for two reasons. First, the district court abused its discretion when it denied BRH's motion to intervene because it misapplied the law when it denied the motion. Second, this case is procedurally skewed. Your Honors, this case is about whether the paternal aunt of a child that had been placed under the guardianship of the Commissioner of Human Services after the biological parents' rights have been terminated may file a motion to intervene in the proceedings. To my first point, the Olmsted District Court denied BRH's motion to intervene because BRH seeks adoptive placement. This is an error for several reasons. First, appellant is only seeking intervention, the opportunity to participate in the proceeding as a statutorily preferred relative. At the hearing for her motion for permissive intervention, BRH acknowledged the distinction between a motion to intervene and a future motion to be an actual placement for the child.
Can I ask you a question before you proceed further? What is our standard of review here? Because aren't we just reviewing the motion to intervene? I mean, the denial of that motion?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so what is our standard for review?
An abuse of discretion, Your Honor.
All right. And why was this an abuse of discretion?
It was an abuse of discretion because the district court denied the motion to intervene, not based on and finding any fault with procedurally or on the merits of BRH motion, but because the court stated that it loved the child too much to allow BRH to intervene.
Well, what is the criteria the court is to utilize in granting a motion to intervene by a relative? What should we be looking at here?
We should be looking at the rules of juvenile procedure that allows a party to intervene, and preferably a relative first. And I can tell you what the statutes say, Your Honor. So it says that a relative should be considered in a motion to intervene.
Well, if you could point to the rule that gave your client standing to make this motion.
Your Honor, I'm able to fully answer your question at this time. However, I'd be more than happy to submit a supplemental brief on that issue.
So Judge Hooten and Ms. Bryan, I'm just curious. I think you'll brief it this way, which is that the rule, juvenile protection rule, provides that intervention should be allowed in the best interests of the child.
Yes, Your Honor.
So is that the right standard, Ms. Bryan? And if
that
you
is
would
correct.
Address that is how, I think what Judge Hooten's getting at, and I have the same question, is how did the district court's order not follow that rule? Because, of course, the district court does talk about the best interests of the child.
The best, thank you for a clarification, Your Honor. The best interest of the child standard also requires a reasonable search for a relative, Your Honor. The best interest of the child standard includes culture, religion, and other standards that the district court did not consider when denying the motion to intervene. So to answer your question, the district court focused on its prior failures with placing this child rather than focusing on the best interest standards as it is laid out in the statute.
Well, did the court meet that standard by indicating that, I think the court said, I love the child, but also said, I have some issues as to whether this relative will permit the child to see the father of the child, the biological father, and that's not in the child's best interest.
And that is true, Your Honor. But the court should have done a separate hearing on whether or not BRH would be allowing the child to see the father. For one, BRH and CVR have not spoken to each other since BRH was a child. So the court should not have come to the conclusion that just because BRH is related to CVR, BRH will allow CVR to see X.
So Ms. Bryan, if I'm following you correctly, you agree that the child's safety is a valid consideration.
Yes.
But it sounds like you're suggesting that the intervention motion precedes that.
That is exactly what I'm suggesting, Your Honor. And it appears that the court procedurally abused its discretion. It made errors. For example, in the county's brief, they wrote, however, in the motion for permissive intervention, appellant indicated she was seeking to adopt XVSR, the child who is the subject of these proceedings, see document index 146. At the hearing at appellant's motion, appellant's attorney also noted that appellant wished to adopt XVSCR, see transcript at 15. For these reasons, respondent asked the district court to rule out appellant as a permanency action. Your Honor, this leads me to my second point. First, a motion for adoptive placement wasn't filed. Therefore, the court could make the appropriate prima facie determination required under the statute of whether BRH could be considered an option for placement. From the county brief, BRH, and for lack of a better word, should have sailed through the prima facie determination as she has already completed the home study, Your Honor. Second, the court itself determined that BRH and her family appeared well-suited as an option for permanency. The district court's denial of BRH's motion to intervene was based not only on error of law, but was a value judgment. The district court determined that while BRH was qualified, he loved X too much to consider BRH as an option for placement.
So, counsel, I want to stop you just briefly. You've repeated in today and then in your brief this remark of the district court judge about loving the child too much. And, you know, I have to be honest with you. I've read that hearing transcript several times, and it seems to me that the district court was not giving that as a reason to deny the motion to intervene, and instead was explaining at the very, very end of the hearing that he had had a lot of contact with the parties in this case, and in particular had supervised everything related to this child very carefully and thoughtfully. Your comment implies that the district court judge had some sort of, you know, was a personal or emotional attachment and therefore didn't see things correctly. And I don't personally see that in the transcript. And if you would like to articulate why I should have said, you know, I'm wrong, you know, I'm welcome that. I would like to hear you explain it.
Well, Your Honor, the reason why I keep talking about that particular portion of the transcript is because the district court had previously placed X with H family, and that did not work out very well. The children were abused in that family.
Right, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but I just, this is a small part of your argument, and I don't want it to take up too much time. So you're right, absolutely. Thank you for pointing out about the Haraway family. The district court, though, did take pains at the hearing to say he does not think that the aunt is in any way, you know, like the Haraway family, or in fact, he separated out the entire Robinson family. He said that appears to be very different. Obviously, Mr. Robinson cannot have any contact with the child, his daughter. That's a whole separate issue, and we're not going to go there. But as to the aunt, he had no concerns about that and encouraged, you know, somehow in the future for the aunt to have a relationship. So I want to be clear that you're not, it doesn't seem like you're claiming that the judge had some sort of emotional, you know, biased type response, because I don't see that in the hearing. I think you have some strong arguments about legal error, and that's what I would like to hear you explain. So for instance, the judge talks about the delay, right? That the aunt delayed filing her motion to intervene until the motion was November, but say October, because that's when the long letter was submitted to the court explaining many things. So why is the district court wrong in its analysis of delay? And that was the primary reason I think the district court denied the motion to intervene.
Your Honor, the court was wrong in terms of delay, because as I stated in my brief, there is no timeline for delays in a motion to intervene. It can be longer and it can be shorter. He did not give us a reason why BRH delay came at a time when it would have been an inconvenience. And furthermore, it wasn't BRH that caused any delay. There was COVID that caused the delay, and there were other at fault that caused the delay. BRH was active in her in seeking to intervene in the motion and to adopt her niece. And it was the county that delayed reaching out to BRH in order for her to bring a motion to intervene, and delayed reaching out to her because they were trying to have talks with the mother to begin with.
Yes, if I understand your timeline correctly, and the county verified this in its brief, the aunt had contact repeatedly with the county in response to the relative search. So in October of 2019, December of 2019, follow up in March of 2020, and then there was a lag in April of 2020 as the COVID-19 delay hit the courts. Did I follow those facts correctly?
Yes, you did, Your Honor. You followed those facts correctly. But the BRH delay, I have seen case law that said that her timeliness is not wasn't an issue in this case, Your Honor. I rest on my briefs, Your Honor.
Well, I would like to follow up with just one additional question, because I feel like there's an issue that the district courts raised that we didn't talk about. So I said that I thought the judge's primary reason for denying the motion to intervene was delay, but there is a second reason that the judge spends actually quite a bit of time on in the hearing, and it has to do with the disruption to X. So this child, you know, we all understand because we've read the record, has been through a horrific experience and had a very hard time getting placed. So would you address the disruption issue? Because I think it's a valid concern of the district court and will come up at any adoptive proceeding if there is an adoptive proceeding.
Yes, Your Honor, I can address the disruptive. The court itself agreed that BRH should be in X's life. I don't understand the disruption, because if BRH, will the court suggest that the family should work together so that BRH could be in X's life? I don't believe it will be a disruption if I take that back, that's a valid judgment. The court said that BRH should be in X's life, Your Honor. I don't foresee disruption if the court had laid out that they would gradually get to know each other. BRH wasn't asking to have this child yanked from the foster home and placed with her. She was asking for a motion to intervene, Your Honor, and then they could gradually come up with a plan that would allow BRH to be active in X's life without causing any disruption to X. It is unfair to X that she doesn't get a chance to meet her aunt, who has advocated so strongly for her and who can provide her with the kind of stability that she needs, and that would help her culturally, morally. BRH has a master's degree in mental health forensic psychology and over 10 years of experience working with children and adults with challenging behavior, Your Honor. In addition, she's married with a child of similar age, same gender, ethnicity, and culture as X, Your Honor. So I think the court made an error when it speak of disruption to X if she is, if BRH intervenes. She wasn't asking for adoption. She was asking to intervene into the motion. I'm sorry, intervene into the proceedings, Your Honor. So the disruption for the child could have been, any disruption for the child could have been mitigated by orders from the judge as to how BRH and X proceed into getting to know each other. She wasn't asking the court to yank X from the foster family and place them and place X with her.
Thank you. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. I think your time is completed. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, the respondent may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Deb Grayler, and I represent Olmsted County Health, Housing, and Human Services in this proceeding. Your Honors, I think what troubles me about this case is that the motion to intervene and the request for reconsideration by the aunt or the appellant left the county in a difficult position, given the case law that we are aware of, that a relative has to be ruled out by the court. There's been statements that the appellant was not seeking adoptive placement, but in the motion to intervene, she asserts that she is the paternal aunt and that the child should be living with her. That was also argued for at the motion for intervention hearing. And then towards the end of the hearing, the attorney actually also asserted that if the court was not going to place the child with the aunt, perhaps the judge could consider a slower transition. So I think what's clear here is that the appellant was seeking adoptive placement. And counsel for appellant mentioned that earlier in her argument.
On that point, Ms. Grayler, I mean, that may be, but is it your position that the standard for granting a motion to intervene is the same as whether or not the child will ultimately be placed with Ms. Bryan's client?
Well, Your Honor, I believe the motion for intervention under the juvenile rules was whether that would be in the best interests of the child. I think the standard for the...
How is the motion to intervene not... How is considering whether or not a maternal aunt should not intervene in a proceeding determining placement of the child not in that child's best interest? It seems to me the ultimate decision on placement, you know, may or may not be, you know, for all the reasons we've talked about, the disruption, foster parents seem to be fabulous. But at the end of the day, I'm hard-pressed to understand why Ms. Bryan's client at least didn't have a chance, at least didn't have an opportunity to become part of the proceedings and then make whatever arguments she wanted to make. So what is your best case that says she couldn't even intervene?
Well, Your Honor, I think the court also viewed this as whether the child should be placed with her for adoption. Certainly,
well,
the court...
my point is, I think that was error. I mean, I think one is different from the other.
Sure.
And I mean, it seems to me the court, you know, sub rosa was thinking, okay, you know, enough's enough. Time is of the essence. My language, not the court's. You know, we need to bring some finality, and I get all that. But that's a placement decision. That's not an emotion intervene decision. And I mean, I guess, you know, one is not, why am I wrong in thinking that these are two different issues?
I don't think you're wrong in thinking that they're two different issues. I think, you know, as the record indicates, the court was, this judge presided over a lengthy trial where there were no family members present. He did not believe it would be in this child's best interest for the paternal aunt to intervene. We started the hearing with some concerns about contact by the paternal aunt towards the foster parents. That was also, you know, something that was kind of mucking things up at that point. Certainly relatives should be considered in the proceeding, and the county conducted that relative search. Paternal aunt should not be penalized for coming forward late. I think the court's statement regarding that was more related to the child being placed with the foster parents at the point that she was.
Well, let's talk about this last statement, because as I look at the record, wasn't the county aware as early as September of 2019 that she was interested, that she was a possible placement? And doesn't the legislature require the agency to do a relative search because there's a preference to place the child with relatives, right?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And the county did conduct a relative search and sent out those letters. I think what initially happened is that the paternal grandmother indicated she wished to adopt the child. Unfortunately, the father was living with her at the time, so that was not an option. Then a few months later in December at the family group conference in December of 2019, that was when the paternal aunt attended and indicated some interest in being an adoptive placement. And then an additional meeting was set up between the social worker, the guardian ad litem, and the adoption worker with the paternal aunt. And then that is when I think there was some equivocation on whether the paternal uncle thought that it would, you know, be a good idea to pursue this. And so those efforts were made. The paternal aunt was identified and certainly participated in the family group conference.
So on the equivocation issue, I mean, I get that. If I at my age suddenly had to consider whether I wanted to adopt, you know, my niece, I think I'd have some equivocation too. But I guess the question I have is, okay, so there was some equivocation. I get that. Did the department then go, you know, I don't know, a week or a month later, go back and say, okay, you know, yay or nay, in or out? I mean, did they ever do that?
I believe they did, Your Honor. And I think in one of the submissions...
Where would I find that in the record?
So that was in... There was... a submission by the adoption worker indicating that there was a meeting at the home with the guardian ad litem, the social worker, and the paternal aunt and uncle, and that they had met with them, and there was some concern about the paternal aunt talking about her brother being around and having contact with the child. And so they left that meeting indicating that they were not going to move the child in with the paternal aunt and uncle at that point. And so when the county received that, the letter from the paternal aunt asking for reconsideration.
So counsel, you have skipped a few months there. So from the time that there was the visit and the concern by the county as to aunt's understanding about contact with the brother. Father of X. There were a number of months, including the TPR trial. And what I understand is that the county does have this obligation to consider a relative, regardless of whether they express interest. The statute seems to be pretty clear on that. But certainly that the equivocation doesn't take the aunt out of consideration. And that I don't see where the county actually considers the aunt and then makes a decision. Until this is probably September, October of following the termination order. So, you know, it seems very confusing to me how your record is presented on consideration of the aunt. Would you address that?
Sure. And I think I would acknowledge that there was a gap in what I was talking about there, because the meeting at the home, which would have been to, you know, meet in the home, answer any questions that the aunt and uncle had, talk to them about the needs of the child, that occurred before the termination trial. And then it was post-termination when the adoption worker was submitting the documents to the court regarding progress towards adoption and acknowledging that there was a family member who had come forward, but that both the county and the guardian ad litem were in agreement that the child should remain with the foster parents. So I would submit that the county did consider the paternal aunt and uncle. I think given the needs of the child and how she had stabilized in the foster home from being placed there back in October, the county and the guardian ad litem were in agreement that the child should remain where she was. And then when the paternal, and they had also referred the paternal aunt for a home study. So she, knowing that she, again, was interested, was informing her of what she would need to do if she wanted to continue to assert her interests in this case.
You have to help me if I'm missing something in the county's analysis. So it sounds to me like you made a decision not to transfer the child immediately, which I think that's not the issue in front of us. The issue is, should the aunt have been allowed to intervene so that she perhaps could have participated in the proceedings as to adoption? And you're telling me that the county went ahead and authorized a home study regarding the aunt. So that sounds to me like you're still considering the aunt. And so I'm just not following the county's analysis and not understanding the refusal to allow the aunt to participate. So help me out there.
I think, again, the county was treating this as though, so at the time they referred her for the home study, they were still considering her. When she submitted her request for reconsideration, that was at a point where the county had said, we are not going to place the child with you. We are going to ask the court to rule you out as an adoptive placement because we believe the foster parents should adopt. And so that was the county's position at that point. And that's why when we received the motion to intervene, our response was that would be denied and the court would rule her out as a permanency option. I understand what the court is saying, that there is a distinction between those two things.
Isn't it an issue of fact that we're talking about, whether she would be more appropriate than the foster parents? And how can she even contest that issue of fact if she can't participate in the case?
Well, I believe she can under the statutes that allow her to provide the court with her address and ask for notice of hearings. She has a right to file a motion for adoptive placement. And I guess that's what we were trying to sort of, again, I think it leaves the county in a difficult position when that motion is not filed, but it's treated as a motion to intervene. But ultimately, that's what she's asking for, is to adopt the child.
So, and the question, isn't there a statutory deadline of some sort? I thought there was, but maybe I'm wrong, with regard to the time period in which relatives can seek adoptive placement once the agency gives notice.
It would be any time during that post-permanency review period. So the
which is how long?
The hearings are required to occur every 90 days once the termination of parental rights has been granted. And under the statute, and I think I mentioned this in my brief, I'd have to find the exact section. When relatives have been given notice, part of that notice is that they, as long as they keep the county advised of their address and the court and their contact information, they have a right to participate in those proceedings. They do not need to be a party to the proceedings.
Well, I understand that you say that, but it is common practice, I think, for parties to both move to intervene and move for adoptive placement. I don't know that it's required that you do them exactly at the same time. I think the aunt makes a reasonable argument that she should be allowed to intervene and then proceed. Obviously, the requirements of submission for a motion for adoptive placement are greater than they are for a motion to intervene. I mean, I don't think you disagree with that.
I do not, no. Yeah.
Okay. So I think the aunt was taking it one step at a time. As you said, her letter was quite clear that that was her intent and that she had proceeded with a home study. So she had taken a lot of steps. So this is where I get confused again about the district court's order. The district court says, as I asked Ms. Bryan about, that the aunt delayed and had no contact until October of 2020. But you're conceding that that's wrong. The aunt had contact with the county.
Yes, the aunt did have contact with the county. And I think what the court was referring to there, I think he said, I didn't hear from you until this time. And the county had indicated that in their submissions post-permanency that the paternal aunt had asked to be considered. There was a meeting that occurred. So yes, the county absolutely acknowledges that she was in contact and expressed that interest in adopting the child. And the court ultimately concluded that was not in the child's best interest, given what she's experienced throughout the case and how she has stabilized in the foster parents' care.
You know, in a motion to intervene in order to determine the best interest of the child, is it necessary for the court to go through the best interest factors in a motion to intervene?
Again, I think perhaps not in particular under the rule, but when the person is specifically seeking adoptive placement, those placement factors are mentioned in the statute. And I believe the court appropriately considered those in determining what was in the child's best interest.
So you don't think it's necessary that the court go through each and every factor in a motion to intervene?
I don't believe that's required under the juvenile rule for that motion for permissive intervention, no.
All right, so that should not be necessarily a part of the court's analysis to go through each and every factor and decide the ultimate placement decision as part of the motion to intervene. Am I correct?
I believe so, Your Honor. Thank you. I believe my time is up.
All right, thank you very much. Ms. Bryan, you have 5 minutes for a rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I just want to clarify that BRAC is estranged from her brother, and she made that clear to the court at the motion hearing. My opposing counsel states that that BRH indicated that she's still in contact with her brother. BRH made it clear to the court that her brother was in and out of jail since she was a child, and they have never been close. And this is close. This is supported by her attempt to adopt X from MLS rather than CVR, her own brother. So she was in discussion with MLS to adopt X and not with her own brothers. I just wanted to clarify that point, Your Honor. And I also wanted to point out that BRH filed her motion to intervene so that she may file a motion for adoptive placement. Yes, because it's not clear whether 260C607 requires party status to file the motion for adoptive placement. But as the court pointed out, the standards that the district court used was an error, because all BRH was asking this court to do was to allow her a motion to intervene in the proceedings. That was all she was asking for, Your Honor.
And the determination of the best interests of the child, I mean, what should the court consider to make that determination? If you don't have to go through all the factors.
The court should, she's an aunt, and BRH is an aunt and a preferred relative. The court should have allowed her to intervene for that reason, Your Honor. It is in the best interest of the child for her to get to know her aunt.
All right. And I just want to make sure I understand the record correctly. In September of 2019, apparently the grandmother said, I think my daughter would be a good possibility here.
Yes, Your Honor.
And then a month or so later, she was actually participating in a family conference, indicating her interest. Am I correct?
Yeah, absolutely correct, Your Honor.
And when did she make it very clear to the to social services that she and her husband were on board to adopt this child?
So her husband, and I need to clarify that, BRH did not equivocate. Her husband, the uncle was a little concerned about having another child in the home. But the very next day, after that concern was raised, the very next day, BRH reached out to the county to let them know that her and her husband wanted to proceed. So immediately, Your Honor.
So how soon? What's the date? Can you put a date on that from the record?
Your Honor, I apologize. I can't remember the date. But what I do know is that the day she informed the county that her husband has questions about adoption, the following day is when she informed the county that her husband has reconsidered and they would like to proceed. I'm sorry, I can't put a date on it for you, Your Honor.
Okay. One of the issues raised is whether that there was a timely motion to intervene brought, and I understand there's nothing that indicates what is timely or not timely. That'd be up to the district court. Why didn't your client bring an earlier motion to intervene?
Because my client didn't bring an earlier motion to intervene because she was talking to the county and she didn't even know until she believed that she was still a viable candidate until they told her that X would be placed for adoption. That's when she brought the motion to intervene because she was not aware that she was not a viable candidate. The county did not rule her out, Your Honor. They were still talking to her and having negotiations and studies with her. It was when she reached out to the county and they told her that X would be placed for adoption, that's when she filed her motion to intervene.
And how soon after she was told she was ruled out did she file for an intervention?
Immediately, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Your Honor.
We have 8 seconds. Anyone else have any questions? All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate the very well done briefs and arguments in this matter. We will take it under advisement and issue a decision as soon as possible. It'll be under the expedited timelines. But thank you today. Very good arguments on both sides. Thank you.